I've seen more 300 bushel corn this year than I've ever harvested before.
We had wind gusts of 61 mile an hour, which blew quite a bit of the corn down. Seen some losses of 100 bushel plus.
I've been waiting to see y'all, and it looks like y'all been waiting to see me too, right?
I'm very comfortable in whatever the timing needs to be.
We can shave years off the development of a product, which will be great for farmers.
There'll be less competition and fewer things to compete over, and that's not a good thing.
I've never seen such instances of denial that has taken place by the industry, and my hope is that I never see this again.
I don't have any desire for there to be this rift between us and the companies. I just got to call it like I see it. That's what I'm paid to do.
The plant board needs to actually look at the science and come up with a solution that enables the growers to have access to this important technology during the growing season.
I'm Mark Dorenkamp.
I'm Larry Lee.
I'm Amy Seitz.
I'm John Perkins.
I'm Megan Grebner.
I'm Julie Harker.
I'm Ken Anderson.
I'm Nicole Heslop.
I'm Shannon Yokley.
And I'm Cindy Young. Brownfield, Ag News for America.
This is the Year in Review from Brownfield, Ag News for America. I'm Tom Stever. 2017 began with the inauguration of a new president. One of President Trump's first items of business was to pull the United States out of negotiations for the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement. That was soon followed by the president's call to renegotiate the North American Free Trade Agreement. Slower in coming were federal appointees at the USDA. As of this recording, not all USDA staff is yet in place. Politics are at play in preserving the renewable fuel standard, the primary policy driver behind corn-based ethanol and soybean-based biodiesel. Stakeholders have made clear their priorities for the next farm bill. Listening sessions of the past year will soon give way to committee and congressional debates on the 2018 farm bill. Farms, farm families, and livestock have been in the destructive path of wildfires and hurricanes in several states this year. As we'll hear, nature's worst brings out the best in people. The process continues toward fewer cooperatives and chemical and seed companies, the result of consolidation. The 2017 release of a new herbicide technology based on an old chemistry has resulted in a vast number of damage complaints in cotton and soybean growing areas. The ag economy is still not good, and commodity prices are relatively weak. And the farm economy is where we begin our year in review, 2017. There are experts who say the farm economy is at or near its trough, but there are others not as optimistic. Although there were some economic bright spots in 2017, the overall ag economy struggled for the fourth straight year. Brownfield's Ken Anderson reports.
The bright spots this year were on the livestock side, but cash receipts for most crop categories were lower. Overall, USDA predicts net cash farm income will increase from $93.3 billion in 2016 to $96.9 billion in 2017. At a Senate Ag Committee hearing on the state of the ag economy in late May, Kansas City Federal Reserve ag economist Nate Kaufman had a rather pessimistic prediction for the ag economy in 17.
Alongside the reductions in farm income the past 4 years, agricultural credit conditions have weakened steadily, and farm real estate values have trended lower. In general, I expect these downward trends to continue in the near term as global supplies are likely to continue to weigh on agricultural commodity prices and profit margins.
At Husker Harvest Days in mid-September, Bob Campbell with Omaha-based Farm Credit Services of America said a lot would be riding on crop yields in the fall.
And then it comes down to what 18 looked like for your cost, for your marketing plan, and your overall financial structure.
As it turned out, crop yields in many areas of the country were better than expected. Brownfield spoke with Jace Wagner of Compeer Financial in early November.
Their financial positions are looking a little better than we expected going into the harvest, but we're still seeing some stress in certain areas where we didn't have a great yield, and we're expecting more conversations about rebalancing their balance sheet, locking long-term interest rates to take some risk off the table, and really just trying to find ways to lower their overall cost of production.
Somewhat surprisingly, farmland values stabilized in many areas of the U.S. in 2017, As Jim Farrell of Farmers National Company told us in mid-November, that bursting of the farmland bubble that many worried about never materialized.
As a matter of fact, probably we have had the best scenario you could have in our land market since 2013 when we kind of peaked. It was like somebody put a really, you know, little hole in the balloon, if you will, and it's just been easing out. So it's been a real gradual decline in values. And that's really good for agriculture if we can continue to do that.
But even though the ag economy showed some signs of stabilizing in 2017, most economists say it's hard to see much improvement in 2018 as large supplies of corn, soybeans, and wheat continue to hang over commodity markets. The livestock picture looks somewhat brighter, although there is concern about whether meat demand will be able to keep pace with continued increases in production going forward. For Brownfield's Year in Review, I'm Ken Anderson.
Somewhat connected to the farm economy, 2017 was a year of mergers and acquisitions in agriculture. Across the countryside, ag cooperatives and seed and chemical companies chose to consolidate, with many deals solidified this past year. Brownfield's Julie Harker has been following that story.
In early January, Monsanto Chief Technology Officer Rob Fraley said a merger of Monsanto with Bayer Crop Science would help get new products to market much faster.
We can dramatically shorten that period and shave years off the development of a product, which will be great for farmers, and it'd be important for the company because it means that, you know, we can save some of that development time and invest in other innovations for growers.
But the proposed mergers of Monsanto and Bayer, Dow and DuPont, and ChemChina's plans to acquire Syngenta were met with concern by many in agriculture.
We'll have fewer choices. There'll be less competition and fewer things to compete over. And that's not a good thing.
National Farmers Union President Roger Johnson was especially concerned with the Syngenta-ChemChina deal, saying U.S. antitrust laws have been weakened and would be nearly impossible to enforce when foreign companies are involved. In September, Bayer Crop Science President Liam Condon told a group of international journalists the merger of Bayer and Monsanto would create a global leader in sustainability and support the UN Sustainable Development Goals. Brownfield's Cindy Young was in Germany.
Condon said other than the company's new name, farmers will notice little change on closing day. He told Brownfield that his company asked the European Commission for a 10-day extension on the merger approval process and is expecting the final decision by the Commission and the United States Department of Justice on January 22, 2018. Reporting from Mannheim, Germany, I'm Cindy Young for Brownfield.
Missouri corn grower Rick Paris said he was concerned at first, but has decided the merger could be good for farmers.
These companies are more complementary to each other than adversarial. And as a result, I look for great things to come to the farmers to make us more profitable and more efficient in the years to come.
In November, a petition with more than 1 million signatures asking the Department of Justice to block the merger was delivered. Joe Maxwell, head of the Organization for Competitive Markets, was among the signers.
You know, this is our food system. Everybody eats. The Bayer-Monsanto deal is a bad deal for consumers and farmers and ranchers.
The first of the big acquisitions to occur in 2017 was that of Swiss-based Syngenta in June by Chinese government-run ChemChina. The merger of Dow Chemical Company and DuPont was finalized next. Company officials said they would focus on three separate companies, one of them agribusiness. I'm Julie Harker on Brownfield.
Much of what keeps U.S. agriculture and the food production system running is labor, full-time and seasonal labor. Labor issues in 2017 made an impact on agriculture. Brownfield's Larry Lee has more.
With America's low unemployment and shortage of workers, managers across the ag sector remained concerned, asking who's going to pick vegetables, who is going to slaughter meat, and who is going to milk the cows. Select Milk Producers President Brad Boma testified to the House Ag Committee about that in July.
We cannot find enough people in Plainview, Texas, Gamaut, Indiana, or anywhere else that will milk cows.
Lori Fisher with the American Dairy Coalition is just one lobbyist working with lawmakers in Washington trying to find a solution.
Those jobs are going unfilled, and we're not able to
understand where our workforce is going to come from.
There have been proposals, including one from Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson, that would have let the states set up their own worker visa programs. But the proposal that has generated the most hope is House Judiciary Committee Chair Bob Goodlatte's Agricultural Guest Workers Act, which is still moving through Congress. A Texas A&M study shows 51% of dairy farm labor is immigrant labor, and without them, herds would have to be cut by more than 2 million cows. They also say the retail prices would nearly double. New Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue talked to Brownfield about ag labor concerns.
Well, let me be clear. The president is cracking down on illegal criminal immigration. He understands for a legal guest worker program in agriculture. He understands the benefit that they are. He understands the shortage of domestic labor.
The common theme Brownfield heard throughout the year was that workers like their farm careers and farm managers appreciate their staff, including dairy farmer Randy Ebert, who has 50 full-time employees working with 3,700 dairy cows every day.
Proud of the people we have, very proud. About half of our staff is immigrant labor, and what doesn't matter who they are, we try to make work a place that you don't mind coming to.
Many farmers already pay well above minimum wage and anticipate those rates will go up in the competitive labor market. For Brownfield's Year in Review, I'm Larry Lee.
The most common reply to questions about harvest results was better than expected, which is what Brownfield's Ken Anderson heard about the harvest in Nebraska and Iowa.
Despite a wide array of weather conditions, from cold and wet early on to hot and dry later on, farmers in Nebraska and Iowa reported some excellent yields in 2017.
We have all our beans out. The yields were phenomenal this year with the August rains.
I am just totally amazed at what our soybeans and our corn, though a little bit I've done, are producing.
I've seen more 300 bushel corn this year than I've ever harvested before.
But it wasn't all smooth sailing. Heavy rains delayed the harvest in northeast Iowa.
We started in September on beans already. We thought, man, this is going to be good. We're going to get done with beans and have a little break and then even go into corn. And we started with beans and we hit a 15-day rain delay and we didn't turn a wheel.
And strong winds in late October took a toll on the remaining corn crop, especially in Nebraska.
We had wind gusts of 61 mile an hour, which blew quite a bit of the corn down and twisted it up and dropped some ears out of the husk. Seen some losses of 100 bushel plus per acre.
For Brownfield's Year in Review, I'm Ken Anderson.
Brownfield's Nicole Heslip reports that Michigan farmers had growing season weather challenges.
Up to 15 inches of rain in mid-June made a lasting impact to Michigan's major field crop production regions. Dave Milligan's Cass City Farm was in the band and said hot and humid conditions that followed raised concern during wheat harvest as they could have led to quality and storage issues.
I know in reality it'll warm up and get some dry weather and some winds and, you know, wheat will get ready to thrash.
At the end of harvest, Mother Nature left farmers just as she started the season, cold and wet. But many were pleasantly surprised how their crops pulled through.
We lost a lot through that rain, and come to harvest time, we're very happy with the yields.
For Brownfield's Year in Review, I'm Nicole Heslip.
This is Larry Lee. In Wisconsin, farmers were battling the weather all year, starting with winter kill in alfalfa fields, followed by a very wet and cool spring. Farmer Jim Zimmerman of Fond du Lac echoed the relief farmers felt when the state received 2 weeks of unusually warm and dry weather in October.
We're looking at corn right now that's going to yield over 200 bushels.
Michael Weiss is an agronomist for CHS Larson Cooperative. He told Brownfield, producers were worried the corn would not finish, but have a potential bin buster on their hands because of that late warm spell.
I'm doing these kernel counts too, and I'm going 18 around, occasional 20, and 32 to 35 long. You know, we got fewer kernels, but I think they're going to be heavier, and I think the yield is going to be there.
For soybeans, Weiss tells Brownfield, producers have pockets of good and bad all over the state.
The guys over in the northwest seem to be pretty happy with their beans, but then right around here in the northeast, I'm hearing anything from 40 to 60 bushel.
Cow-calf grazing operator Mark Liebert says the northern part of Wisconsin had three early snow events, ending the season for his pastures.
There are actually hay fields that did not get cut.
For Brownfield's Year in Review, I'm Larry Lee.
More on the 2017 harvest is coming up later on the Year in Review from Brownfield. The North American Free Trade Agreement has been in effect since 1993,
President Trump has made good on his campaign promise to re-examine the pact and has threatened to walk away from it. During renegotiations, the drumbeat from free traders is to do no harm. And as Mark Dorenkamp reports, during rounds of talks among NAFTA stakeholders, agriculture is on pins and needles.
Even before President Trump was sworn in as the 45th president of the United States, Kent Baucus with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association told Brownfield he was concerned about Trump's plan for the North American Free Trade Agreement.
In Canada, we sell a lot of high-value muscle cuts, cuts that Americans also prefer. We sell them at a premium. In Mexico, we sell a lot of other cuts that Americans don't want. And so without this access, where are we going to send that beef?
In February, more than 130 state and national ag organizations sent a letter to Trump asking for a voice in renegotiations. National Corn Growers Association Chairman Chip Bowling urged the president to keep trade flowing.
Let's make sure that these trade agreements stay in place while negotiations are being had. That way we don't completely lose our market. If they don't have the availability to buy corn from the United States, they will buy it somewhere else. And anytime you lose a customer, it's hard to get them back.
The renegotiation of NAFTA officially began in August, with Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue offering assurances the president understood the importance of the trade deal to agriculture. Earlier this month, Perdue reiterated his confidence a modernized NAFTA agreement would happen sometime in 2018.
There are going to be some anxious moments for our agricultural producers across the country. At the end of the day, I do believe we will get an agreement over NAFTA.
The next official round of NAFTA negotiations is scheduled for late January in Montreal. Early in 2017, President Trump issued an executive order pulling the U.S. out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, citing his administration's preference to work bilaterally with other countries. American Farm Bureau President Zippy Duval says the departure of the U.S. from TPP isn't slowing down its progress and that other countries are moving forward and taking the lead.
Without being in that trade treaty, we're running the risk of not having access to those markets, and we're also running the risk of not taking a lead in formulating what might be the new rules and regulations around trade treaties in the future.
And in October, the United States and South Korea agreed to amend their free trade agreement known as CORUS. The biggest issue surrounding CORUS was said to be automobiles, but there were also reports that the U.S. wanted South Korea to accelerate the reduction of agricultural tariffs, many of which are being phased out slowly over 10 years or longer. The National Pork Producers Council said it would continue fighting for the preservation of U.S. pork's zero-tariff treatment in CORUS. For Brownfield's Year in Review, I'm Mark Dorenkamp.
The new Trump administration took its time in seating USDA appointees. We'll have more on that and the better-than-expected harvest. That's coming up after the break on The Year in Review from Brownfield.